a suggestion for Malachi, a biography he should read, you can text us at 218-326-1234. We heard from someone listening in about the concerts, saying one of the coolest concerts I ever saw was the Mountain Goats performing in a living room in St. Cloud. I maybe need a little perspective on that. That's a band, right?
Mountain Goats are a band, yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Kind of very centered around one particular guy named John Darnell. And this is a great text. I would love to know more about this living room show of John Darnell. Kind of a famous indie singer who was Low Fidelity for a while. And then, has been doing his thing for a long time. So,
all right.
How did that happen? If anyone else out there has a story on a concert they'd like to share with us, anything from a living room show to First Ave, all the way to Red Rocks, you name it, right here in Grand Rapids, let us know. You can text us 218-326-1234.
This is 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji, 89.9 in Brainerd. And on your smart speaker, telling the stories of Northern Minnesota through music, news, conversation, and events. Check out playlists, podcasts, and more at KAXE.org.
Our forecast for today, cloudy skies. We have highs in the mid-40s. Tonight, lows down into the low 30s, right around freezing. Maybe some patchy fog early today, the same for tomorrow morning. Then mostly sunny for Friday and highs in the upper 40s. And for Saturday, mostly cloudy. With highs up into the low 50s. So looking like another warm-ish for the time weekend we have on our way. And I know that maybe I shouldn't speak on this because I'm not a weather expert, but maybe finally some snow next week, which I thought at one point was never coming. But when I checked this morning.
Fingers crossed.
Depending on your...
For KAXE News, I'm Megan Buffington with the Up North Report. A missing Friedenberg man was found dead by the St. Louis County Sheriff's Office Rescue Squad Wednesday morning. 62-year-old Mark Curran had not been seen or heard from since leaving his home Monday afternoon. In a news release, the Sheriff's Office said no foul play is suspected and the cause of death will be determined after an autopsy. Election offices in over half of Minnesota's 87 counties have received emailed bomb threats since November 8th, according to the Secretary of State's office. A news release says the threats have been reported by county, state, and federal partners, and affected counties are responding according to local policies and procedures. The Secretary of State's office said it could not provide a list of affected counties. In the release, Secretary of State Steve Simon says, quote, "Threats of violence against election workers aimed at disrupting our democracy are absolutely unacceptable. Although Election Day is over, election officials across the state are continuing their work to verify that the election was free, fair, accurate, and secure." Garbage hauled to the St. Louis County landfill in Virginia won't just be waste anymore. On Tuesday, county leaders unveiled the landfill's new geothermal energy field.
You know, I've been in this business for probably going on 3 decades now. And it's about as exciting as waste management can get.
Dave Fink is the Environmental Services Director for St. Louis County. He says the geothermal field and the planned wastewater treatment plant it will heat are both the first of their kind in Minnesota. Fink says the idea for geothermal came during a visit to the County Government Services Center in Virginia, which uses solar and geothermal energy.
I was just asking him about it because I know waste breaks down, organic waste in an MSW landfill, from 90 to about 120 degrees. I said, there's a lot of heat to be captured there. And this wastewater treatment plant is going to need a lot of heat and a lot of energy.
The plant will be built about a quarter mile away and is expected to be finished in 2026. It'll treat leachate, the liquid that passes through a landfill and picks up contaminants like forever chemicals in the process. The landfill currently treats between 5 and 6 million gallons of leachate every year, containing it in two large holding ponds and then dispersing it over large grass fields. The new wastewater plant will instead treat the leachates using a system of filters and other technology. Fink says it's just another layer of environmental protection. A news release says the whole project is a blueprint for future waste management facilities, like the new one planned for Canyon. The new landfill cell cost $3 million, and the geothermal liner only added $33,000 to that total. It's expected to pay for itself within the first year of operation. Changes in leadership at the federal level are likely to have some effect on the labor movement. In Minnesota, election results have spurred thoughts about topics like the future of OSHA's worker safety standards. It may be too early to get a firm read on what will happen under a second Trump administration. Meanwhile, at the state level, Democrats still control the Minnesota Senate, but the House is locked in a tie between both parties. Democrats did bolster labor laws in recent sessions. Mike Wild leads the Fair Contracting Foundation of Minnesota, which he says has a non-political stance. Moving forward, no matter the policy, he says enforcement is key.
We can have all the laws we want on the books, but unless they're enforced and meaningful, they don't do anybody any good.
While campaigning, President-elect Donald Trump made attempts to appeal to unions, but his first term saw a big cut in the number of federal safety inspectors for job sites, and analysts expect his staff to curtail a proposed heat safety rule. Wild says OSHA isn't the only tool out there, but notes it plays a big role in protecting rooftop construction teams. He agrees more resources and flexible enforcement options are needed in this area. Thanks to Minnesota News Connection for this story. That's it for the Up North Report. From the KAXE News Desk, I'm Megan Buffington, telling the stories of northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report on KAXE is made possible by Woodland Bank, providing customers with personal and business banking solutions, as well as offering Kasasa checking accounts. You can learn more online at woodland.bank.
Good morning, it is 7:07 and you are tuned in to the Thursday Morning Show. It's our mix of National Public Radio news, local news like what we just heard, and conversations about where we live. I'm Heidi Holton.
I'm Malachi Coons.
Thanks for tuning in this morning. It's going to be a good day. We got some rain yesterday. That was good to feel out there. Way before the ground freezes, so it actually amounts to something. Because I think Tornado Bob was saying on Tuesday that every place in the state, you know, and of course across the country, but we were just looking at the state, how dry everything is. And we're never going to catch up for the... rainfall we did not get. So
yeah, the way he had started by saying, you know, some of our counties are in partial drought, I remember thinking it started slightly hopeful, and then it was like, and all of our counties are in some sort of drought, and I was like, okay, never mind.
Yeah.
he got me there. But yeah, it was nice to just feel some mist on the face, and
yeah,
when things just feel like that, like there's rain in the air. It is you don't realize it when it's not happening. But
yeah, we're hoping for snow, at least Malachi and our IR, a lot of people, it's they don't love the snow. I would like to see some
snow,
ice.
Yes. I was just going to say, first. Don't quote me on that. Yeah. I saw, you know, there's a chance next week over a few days.
Yeah.
So
yeah. It's the up and down time of year. You know, you never know what's going to happen. We might get surprised. I'm really hoping for, though, I kind of like it when we have the season of ice and then we get the snow. Because the folks get obsessed with the ice skating or ice boating, and then the snow moves in and the skiing starts and, you know, ice fishing through both of those. So yeah.
Yes, I'm really looking forward to doing some ice skating. I always hope that we will get a nice hard freeze everywhere before the snow comes. But that's okay. We can get some snow, and I don't think the lakes are even close to being frozen, so it won't wreck the.
We did get a prediction from Jeff this morning. He said 3 weeks. He thought the first week of December that we are going to see some of the lakes.
Okay.
I mean, that's his prediction, but you know.
That's hopeful.
Yeah. We'll see.
I guess it depends on if you like the cold, but for me, I would love it to be colder, so I'll take that prediction.
We would like to thank our business supporters, and that includes the Move It Real Estate Group, from in-town residential homes to lakefront settings with both recreational and commercial properties. Move to what moves you. More at moveitrealestate.com.
And from Oak Hill Assisted Living in Grand Rapids, providing personalized care in a home setting. More information online at oakhillseniors.com.
Tonight in Big Four, a classic movie series continues at the Edge Center for the Arts. This month's film is Top Hat. It's a musical starring Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers.
There is also some live music around the area today. Kim Nagler will be at Smoke on the Water in Cold Rain. That is at 5 p.m. And then Russ Sackett will be at the Ore House in Gilbert. That is at 6 o'clock today.
Here's something fun for you. The North Ridge Community Credit Union in Virginia has a holiday pet photo event, and that's today from 4 to 6 o'clock. It's with the Mesabi Humane Society. So you can go
What does that mean?
You can go there and they'll put a cat, sand hat on your cat or something and get a nice photo for your Christmas card. And then you pay for that, and then the proceeds benefit the animal shelter, and donations of pet supplies are also welcome, but your pets have to be leashed.
I love that. I don't currently have a pet, but I wonder if you can go. I wonder if they have like stand-in pets there if you just want a photo with a pet.
Maybe. Huh. That's a good point.
Yes. That could be. I don't think I've never had a Christmas card.
Oh.
But maybe this is my year.
Maybe.
Maybe once I have a pet.
I don't know why I see a turtleneck in your future.
Because I love turtlenecks.
Okay.
And it is the season.
Soon, we hope, right?
Yeah. I actually wore one yesterday and I was like, oh, this is a little warm. I'm a little stuffy. We're not there yet, but
yeah.
Hey, for me, I have a long turtleneck season. So,
oh, coming up today at 9 o'clock, we're on the river with our very own Judy Gruey. She's bringing us a great morning of music today. And then at 7 o'clock, Papa Steve Ross and the Dead Set and On the River.
Wow. Looking forward to that. I think, Papa Steve Ross has, taking a few months off, or it's been a little while since he was back and had some great fill-ins on the Dead Set, but good to see Papa Steve Ross, and for all the Dead fans, that is on the way later today here on KAXE. We're also going to be chatting with Megan Buffington. You just heard the Up North report from her. We will have her live on the air talking about some of the work she is doing to sort of better represent the regional trends that are going on through maps and data in our area. And in just about 10 minutes, we're chatting with Aaron Brown about deer hunting.
That's right.
Which is also the season right now for deer hunting. Are you on your way out there right now, in the car, headed towards the deer stand? Let us know. Text 218-326-1234.
We got to remember to ask him about his wallet.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? Keep that in mind. We'd like to thank Lake Country Journal for their support. They're a lifestyle magazine since 1997. They're a local publication that shares stories from the heart of Minnesota about the places to go, the things to do, and the people to know in Lake Country. LakeCountryJournal.com.
And from the Northland Foundation, working within Northeast Minnesota, offering grants, small business supports, and programs to help people and communities. Working toward a future where everyone feels they belong and can thrive. Learn more at northlandfdn.org.
It's time now for, we're going to sample our album of the week. This was chosen by our very own Andrew DeZingle. I know you guys don't usually say who is the chooser, but he was very excited about this.
Yeah, no, it's I think on our website, kaxc.org, you can find a write-up that Andrew did. And we do kind of bounce in and out of who's picking. And Kari Hedlund, who I'm feeling for this morning, is on vacation. So Andrew chose this wonderful album that I'm a big fan of from a group called Kit Sebastian. The album title is New International. And I think that title right there alone is a good wrap up. There's a lot of different things from all around the world going on in their music. But it is just sort of like the world is so global now. And sometimes I love when music can really, it seems to be a really good way at pulling in all these different pieces of the world in a very cohesive way. And that's what this album that Andrew DeZingle chose. Check out his write-up at kexc.org. We're going to hear a song called Bull, Bull, Bull. This is the Thursday Morning Show. We just heard from our album of the week from Kit Sebastian. The album's called New International. That is Bull, Bull, Bull. Let us know what you think of it. Text 218-326-1234. I'm Malachi Coons here with Heidi Holton. And in just a moment, we're going to be chatting about deer season, deer hunting, traditions, everything that goes around it. As folks in northern Minnesota, whether or not you hunt, we know we are all near to hunting and probably have some sort of story or connection to it. And we're going to be joined by Aaron Brown, sharing his thoughts as well. If you'd like to chime in with something, we've heard already from folks on some of the food they prep, some of the how busy the season is. Let us know. We'd love to hear from you. I know there's lots of stories around it. I'm trying to think of, this is sort of a weird story, but what I have to remember is my family did not hunt, lived out in the country. And so I remember older sister, I'm not throwing her under the bus here, but all her different boyfriends would come to our house to hunt. So that's what that's what I remember. Hopefully they weren't using her. Anyways,
yeah,
there was a stream of them.
For land.
Yes. Some of her ex-boyfriends continue to hunt there to this day. Well, so it turned into a fruitful partnership. But
probably didn't. Deer, most people can agree, deer need to be thinned.
Yes.
You know, yes. I mean, no one probably likes the actual killing of the animal, but it's something that needs to happen, you know,
because totally.
It causes a lot of damage,
yeah.
You know, and all of that. So that was a good thing for your family. You didn't have to pick up the guns or the bows.
Nope. I'm sure my mom was thrilled with the vegetable garden it was a good community relationship. And I think they would sometimes give us part of the deer if they shot it too.
I hope so.
I know. I don't, maybe, is that like a, if you're hunting on someone's land and you get one, do you give them something?
Yeah.
Sort of unwritten rule of deer hunting? Or maybe it's written.
Maybe it's written. I don't know. I don't know about that. But there's a lot of sharing and I think that's what hunt deer camps are about. Kind of you're sharing the food that is keeping you going, the sharing the games and the fun as you're, you know, getting ready to go to the deer stand and helping each other out with all the equipment and the things you need and keeping each other safe and all of that kind of stuff. So I don't know. I just see it as kind of being part of that. We were talking about live music as well. We heard from Bubba earlier. He said, seen Johnny Lang when he was 16 years old playing at the Whiskey Junction in Minneapolis. He may have even been younger. This was in the early 90s.
Heidi, you remember the smell of First Avenue?
Yeah.
I'm not familiar with Whiskey Junction. How would you describe Whiskey Junction? Are you aware of this venue?
Oh, yeah. I used to go there in college. Okay. Yeah. It was a place you could dance more than...
I love that.
Were places to... Not, you can dance. Obviously, it's mostly dancing at First Avenue and 7th Street Entry. I mean, it's most of the concerts I've been to there, I'm standing and dancing or doing something. I mean, you can be sitting somewhere, but...
Sometimes so little space that you are unable to dance freely.
Which is always really fun for me to figure out how I can see the stage because I have to move. Yeah. I got to keep moving because I'm so short, right?
Yes.
To see around people and it's really...
Find your lane.
Yeah. It's kind of fun. You'd think it would be all bad, but it's not. It's like a whole puzzle system to figure that out. But anyway, Whiskey Junction was more of a place there were chairs and tables, but then a dance space in front of it.
Okay. Yeah.
So you could go there and watch the people dancing, and it was more likely that you'd see someone doing like more of a couples dancing, right?
All right. Does they would swing sense? A little
yes.
bit. Yes.
Yeah, maybe.
That makes sense.
I mean, probably Bubba's going to say you don't know what you're talking about. Maybe I'm remembering a different venue, but anyway, good to hear from you, Bubba, and we love hearing from folks this morning. The number to text is 218-326-1234.
We receive support from Harmony Food Co-op, Bemidji's full-service downtown grocery store, providing products needed to live a healthy life, including a variety of local, organic, fair trade, and conventional items. Open daily from 8 to 8, more at harmonyfoods.coop, also on Facebook. And from Bemidji Brewing, offering opportunities in the tap room all season long for holiday shopping and gathering. Find out more about pop-up shops, rentals, events, and more on Facebook. Bemidji Beer, nice catch.
7:22 on the Thursday Morning Show on member-supported KAXE, where we're hunting for members this next week or so. We're asking for you to join us. $60, and we get you the new KAXE eco-friendly notebook. You could, you know, you could talk about your innermost thoughts in the notebook. You could write, you know, your next...
Your innermost?
Yes.
The deepest, the scary stuff?
Or your recipes, or your next column, perhaps. You'd take those notes in there. Aaron Brown joins us now. He's a writer, author, instructor at Minnesota North College. He's a columnist with the Star Tribune and a hunter through and through.
Well, I'll accept the first definition because it's legally true. I am a hunter. I have a hunting license, but I am not, as Bugs Bunny would say, the great Nimrod. So,
well, but the traditions are so strong in the Brown family,
yeah.
Are they not?
They are, and I think our family qualifies very much as the cultural hunting family. Evidenced by the first weekend at our camp, of course, real hunters know that the opening day is one of your best chances to get a deer because the deer are unawares of what's about to happen, supposedly, though they seem pretty tuned in. And so the first weekend, we've only got a couple serious hunters who go out at dawn. I am not one of them, but my son is. And so he's up in his stand waiting for the deer to come along. And my grandfather, who is 90 and has hunted a long, long time, decided that now is the time to take out the skid steer and move some gravel. And so he's moving gravel. They decide, and there's a tree in the way. Would they cut down? Then we have to cut and split the tree for firewood that we don't need because we just stacked firewood, but now we're stacking more firewood. Anyway, we're at the shack. We're playing with expensive equipment and making a lot of noise. And that is our version of hunting. It was not successful. But that's never the point. There's a sauna, and that's why I go. It's a really nice sauna at my shack. And, we did spend time in the woods. And even if you don't shoot a deer, there's some power to that. I certainly needed that time in the woods this year. And we're going back again tomorrow.
So was all the noise, grandpa noise, was happening when Henry was trying to hunt early? Is that... Did that?
Well, I don't know. Early is 9 a.m. early? It's kind of early. It's really not a great time to be making a lot of noise for okay. hunting purposes.
Okay.
That makes sense. It didn't.
Yeah,
the
sun was up. The sun was up.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, so what about the we've heard sauna traditions and expensive equipment and firewood. These are some of the traditions in the Brown family. What about the food? Uh-huh. At the shack.
Well, of course, the food is one of the set. As when my boys were little, that was the attraction because we would just go up for the day when the boys were little. I never, and by the way, this is I never went hunting as a kid. I never wanted to go. And it was not in my nature. I was a book kid and I never really wanted to go. The hunting shack was a little more wild back in those days. There were things happening there that my mother wasn't thrilled with me being a part of, and looking back, frankly, for very good reason. I never went, but I started going when my boys were young because it was a really great way for them to see their grandpa and great grandpa and other relatives that they didn't get to see very much, me too. And then, of course, they loved it because you'd go there and there's this big, great table in the main room of the shack. And it is always traditionally covered from edge to edge with pastries and snacks and pickled goods and meat sticks, cheese that's left out for 3 days that you eat anyway. Everything that you can imagine is on this table and you can take as much of it as you want, which for a little kid is pretty cool. So the kids loved it at first just for that reason. But, as they got older, especially my oldest, Henry's got very interested in the outdoors. And my son, Doug, is also something of an outdoorsman. And George never liked the outdoors much, but he likes snacks. And, you know, so anyway, they got into the other parts of the shack, the trails maintenance, going out in the trails, trees, wildlife, and then eventually hunting itself. And they got their hunting certificates. And you know, to be honest, it kind of skipped a generation. My sons, Doug and Henry, both hunt much, much harder than I ever did. And I have a license and I have a rifle, but my role is, I like to say, I'm the defensive hunter. If a deer were to attack us, I feel that I would be able to defend us from this marauding deer. But other than that, I'm not the one. I'd like to see my sons get a deer more than I would like to get a deer. And so, but it's you know, that's the thing about it. You'll meet a lot of hunters who fall on the spectrum from being very serious, you know, with the not doing dirt work at 9 a.m. on opening day, but in fact being really quiet and trying to actually hunt deer, all the way to, you know, people who just really do it for fun and for the culture of it.
So, Aaron, I know that you have, one of the things you enjoy about it is getting a license.
Yeah.
That's a part of the, yes.
Yeah,
is that going to change, or is there something coming up with license that's going to be a little different?
Yeah, I just wrote about this, and you know, one of the things, a license makes you the same as anyone else with a license. You know, there's no tiers to licensing. You can win the doe lottery and have a doe permit or something like that. But for the most part, if you've got a license, you've got the same license as the person next door. And so for me, I was a book kid. I'm a writer. I am a college instructor. You know, I'm not winning Macho Man Randy Savage prizes here. You know, I'm just not doing it. And so, so going to the Balsam store, which is where I go, which is just down the road from where I live, and buying my license, and holding that little plastic sleeve with my license in it is, other than my fantasy football draft each year, one of the most manly things that I do. And so, you know, that's special for me. And it is nice to, you know, just chat with the people behind the counter and, you know, see the other people picking up their supplies for the season. And it's kind of a communal thing. And yeah, it is changing. If you haven't heard, the DNR is going to a online system for its licensing, not just for hunting, but for fishing and some other things too. Not everything, but some things. And, you know, you're going to be able to buy your license online and then display your license on an app that you carry on your phone. And that would include the tag for the deer. Well, it's not a tag anymore, obviously, but you can record your deer if you get one, and it will essentially report it right there in the app. If you're in a place with not much cell reception, it'll hold that information until you're in a place that does. So, I mean, it's very convenient. And of course, a lot of hunters have been taking pictures of their license and carrying it just on their phone, and that's opened up a couple of legal questions over whether that's okay. Well, this kind of takes care of that. Obviously, it maybe makes the whole system more efficient, probably saves some money. But yeah, you lose that that human touch of, you know, chit-chatting with the people, looking at the map on the wall and just figuring out where you're, I almost said legislative district. That's how bad I am at hunting. Your area, your zone, your deer hunting zone, which is distinct from, though I would be curious what kind of legislature would be elected from the deer zones. It would be quite something. But anyway, that human experience is going to change a little bit. They'll still sell licenses at gas stations, just they won't be the same printout kinds that we've been getting. And you can carry a paper license, but it's going to be something a little more like a piece of printer paper. And, you know, a lot of that's going to change. Of course, it's changed before. You know, in the 19-teens and 20s, a game warden would write out a license for a person on a little scrap of paper, and you'd pay him the license fee, and the game warden got to keep it because that was the only, he didn't get paid. So that system is a little questionable, and so things can change, and sometimes it's a good thing. But yeah, it's a changing thing. But hunting is changing overall. You know, there's fewer people hunting. The generational jump to the next generation is something that really concerns a lot of hunters, because if you go to an average shack, you'll see a lot more gray hair than you will kids. And that's something that concerns a lot of people, and perhaps rightfully so. You know, how do you keep this tradition going, and you know, what will it look like in, say, 20 years? It could look quite a bit different.
Yeah, that's actually wanted to ask about that. For you, you didn't go much as a kid, maybe at all, but and I've always thought of hunting as that some sort of thing where you need to have that early, you're taught, which I know probably isn't true, but for you to go later on in life, was your parents, your people in your family still just happy to show you the ropes once you came in later? What was that like, learning at a later age?
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting. My dad is, well, I say amateur, but in fact, he could be professional, but he's a gunsmith. And so he's always been very technical and very knowledgeable about every kind of rifle and gun you can imagine. And he always wanted me to show that same interest, and he tried. And I just, he knew, and this is, by the way, this is a life lesson that I learned from my dad that has served me well as a dad myself. When he realized that I was not interested in his life's passion, my dad was, for his age and time on this earth, very cool. He didn't try to make it a big deal. And he let me follow my interests. And I have tried to do that with my sons. And lo and behold, no journalists, no public speaking, no speech kids, no student council kids, no knowledge bowl kids. I got three boys that are completely different than me and from each other. And I tried to let them follow their interests, which fascinatingly are very similar to my father's interests. and so he's thrilled that he's had a chance to have that experience with my kids that he didn't have with me. But it's also given me this wonderful opportunity, when I'm old enough to know what it means, to spend time with my dad and my grandpa, who's still with us, in a way that I, you know, had I, you know, my grandpa, 90% of my communication with him is at deer camp. And it's, he just doesn't say much. He's a stoic presence at all family gatherings. But at deer camp, he tells you stories, and he tells you about the past, and he tells you about things that he knew, people he knew, and it's fascinating. And it's really changed my relationship with him, and my uncles and other people who come by the shack, adjacent people. And it's really cool. So I, you know, if you're a hunter and your kid's not into it, give it time and always keep it, the door open, you know. I had, as a 30 something year old guy, I had to learn how to properly load and unload a rifle. I had to learn the basics of gun safety as a grown up person. And it wasn't, you know, that is a barrier for a lot of people. But I think if you find the right people that you're comfortable with, it's not a big deal. It's just like picking up any hobby later on. And you don't have to, you know, paint your face with camouflage and hold a knife in your teeth while you skulk through the woods. You can take it easy and just sit in a stand for a while. I read a book last week. See, I combined my loves. I sat in a stand with a gun, with a license, and I read an entire ass book, you know, and that's what I did on my hunting weekend. And it was exactly what I needed. And had a deer come by, it might have been in danger, but fortunately for the deer and frankly for me, cause I didn't really want to deal with that. No deer, but you know, that's part of the fun.
All right. What was the book?
Demon Copperhead by Barbara Kingsolver, which is a brilliant book. I hope to write about it in the near future. It's a modern retelling of David Copperfield.
Wow. Look at all we got here. We got food. We got book reviews. We got gun talk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And some
parenting lessons.
Oh, my gosh. It's, yes.
It's the full shebang on the Thursday morning show.
Well, I'm the whole package. What can I say?
That's Aaron Brown. You can read his work in the Star Tribune and at his website. It's minnesotabrown.com. Aaron, thanks so much.
Thank you all.
Interesting stories we're sharing today. Thanks so much to Aaron. We'd love to hear from you. Did that bring up some family things? I've always been tickled by that because I knew Aaron before his children and knew he was not a hunter. And to have boys who were interested in this, and I've actually gotten to go. I went with he and his son, Henry and John Latimer. I got to go on the Christmas bird count with them.
Ooh, I love a bird count.
It's great. And I did not realize that came from his dad in a weird way, to like let them be who they were going to be. So anyway, good stories today. We'd love to hear from you this morning. 218-326-1234.
Yeah, it got unexpectedly deep there for a second. It sort of reminds me of, I got a scrapbook, you know?
Yeah.
For tickets.
Oh, nice.
And you can slide them in under that little wrapping and then you can write about them. I think I went to two concerts and then all of a sudden, no more physical tickets. And it sat unused. And that sort of, going to a ticket office and getting a physical thing, which is different in this case, but I miss that.
You
can print it out at home on a sheet of printer paper, but it's not the same.
Yeah, I mean, we do the same thing for Riverfest. We don't have paper tickets for that, you know?
I know, but, yes, not but, saying that.
Yeah, and for a small organization, though, it's like, it's also another cost.
For sure.
The tickets and all of that kind of stuff. But yeah, no, I've been going through old things and I've been finding paper tickets of concerts I've been to. And it's
pretty trip,
cool.
Right?
Yeah.
It's just a trip down memory lane.
Yep.
We receive support from Benders, offering name brand shoes, clothing, and gifts with locations in Grand Rapids, Hibbing, and Duluth. BendersShoes.com, our family serving yours.
We'd also like to thank Hills Country Greenhouse and Custom Sprinklers. They're 5 miles south of Bemidji on US 71. The Hill family's hosting a Christmas festival December 7th and 8th. They also offer Christmas trees, winter greenery, custom porch pots, and a holiday photo booth open until December 20th. Hills Country Greenhouse on Facebook.
All right, Heidi, what are we doing next? We're doing
best wishes.
We're doing best wishes? Yes. Okay, sweet. Well,
you know, that's the cool thing of the morning show. We actually wish our friends and neighbors happy birthday and happy anniversary.
Yeah, it is a cool thing. It's one of mine. Yeah, I love to. A little nervous that I'm going to say people's names wrong, but
it's okay.
I love to share these things. It is November 14th, and we're going to kick things off with a anniversary. Best wishes to Gus and Susan Schecker from Deer River.
We know these folks.
We do know these folks.
They're the food truck.
They are a fantastic cooking pair.
And longtime supporters of KEXE. So Gus and Susan, hope you have a great day today.
Yeah, and I hope they're enjoying they're in their off season.
There we go.
So, well, I guess I don't know fully, but from the food stuff.
There we go.
Yeah.
Joanne Bakken, happy birthday to you from Grand Rapids.
Paul Fisher from Reamer is turning 92 today. Happy birthday.
Daryl Doring, happy birthday to you. He's from the Tamarack Amusement Center and play Frogger. That's what I'm going to say to you, Daryl.
And Lara Thomason, happy 44th birthday from La Porte.
Joy's not forgotten me. This gravel road crackles like static in the air. Don't know the way, but I'm getting there. There's humming in my head. Melody breaking free. Joy's not forgotten me. Tonight I sway to that old time sound. In a crown of starlight and a cotton gown. I'll dance with the moon through the cracks in the clouds. Sing my thanks for what I found. tell it on the prairie. I have all I need. Joy's not forgotten me. Tonight I swear to that old time south.
This is the Setlist on KAXE, where we highlight live music around the area for the upcoming week. I'm Malachi Coons. We are looking at Friday, November 15th and Saturday, November 16th, with shows in Akeley, Virginia, and Nisswa. Beginning this Friday at 5:30 p.m. in Akeley, Americana singer Charlie Wagner will be performing at the River Bar and Grill. Wagner has released two solo albums and currently leads Americana jam band Forge North. Again, you can catch Charlie Wagner at the River Bar and Grill in Akeley, 5:30 this Friday. The Minot Mushkiki Fest is also this Friday at 5:30 at the Iron Trail Motors Event Center in Virginia. Part of a Native American Heritage Month celebration, the event is headlined by Keith Cicola, an acclaimed rock and roller best known for his song Indian Cars, and folk singer Annie Humphrey. The Minot Mushkiki Music Fest this Friday, 5:30 onwards in Virginia. Then at 8 p.m., Nicholas David will be at the Ore House. He is a soul and blues singer who released his first album in 2004, was a featured artist on Charlie Parr's version of Rocky Raccoon, and later was a finalist on the TV show The Voice. Most recently, he released the album Yesterday's Gone in 2019. Catch him this Friday, 8 p.m. at the Ore House in Gilbert. And then on Saturday, Doyle Turner will be at the Roundhouse Brewery in Nisswa at 5 p.m. Turner is a singer-songwriter based in Bemidji who writes heartfelt songs in folk, Americana, and country. This is his first show in the region since releasing a new album, Paper Maps, last Friday. That's this Saturday, Doyle Turner in Nisswa at 5 p.m. Do you have information on live music you'd like us to know about? Email comments at kaxe.org. The set list is made possible by the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.
.746 coming up, our daily dose of phonology on the Thursday morning show.
Support comes from Grand Itasca Clinic and Hospital in Grand Rapids, offering rewarding careers in healthcare with open positions available at granditasca.org/careers. Grand Itasca, where you're treated like family.
Cloudy skies today with highs 43 to 45, north winds around 5, and evening lows tonight 30 to 34 degrees. Our thanks goes out to the Watermark Arts Center in Bemidji, 505 Bemidji Avenue. Galleries are open to the public with an on-site retail store featuring regionally created art, home decor, and handcrafted gifts. WatermarkArtsCenter.org.
And we'd also like to thank Lake Country Power, a Touchstone Energy cooperative committed to community and giving back through scholarships, youth programs, Operation Roundup, and more. Lake Country Power, made by the community, for the community.
It's time now for our daily dose of phonology. Here's John Latimer.
On today's date, November 14th, 2006, I get a report of a varied thrush in Britt, Minnesota. Varied thrushes are birds of the West. And if you've ever been out to Glacier National Park or just out in the Western Mountains, you have no doubt heard and seen these birds. They look a lot like a robin, except that where the robin would have a red breast from chin to tail feathers, the varied thrush has a red breast with a broad black bib that kind of cuts across the front of its breast. And that marks a difference between the two. Now, the varied thrush, if it shows up at your house, is unlikely to leave, probably going to stay for most of the winter if you continue to provide it with feed. But I have never heard of a varied thrush spending its entire year or life here in northern Minnesota. They somehow get blown in here off of a winter storm coming from the west, and they stay until, well, as late as April, but not much after that. I've never had a report of a varied thrush sticking around into May or June.
That's your daily phenology. Tune in Tuesday mornings at 7:20 for John Latimer's full phenology report and send us your nature notes to comments@kaxc.org or join our Season Watch page on Facebook. This is the Thursday morning show. I'm Malachi Coons here with Heidi Holton. Support comes from the Minnesota Historical Society presenting holiday sleigh rides at the Forest History Center in Grand Rapids, featuring a horse-drawn sleigh ride through the Northwoods to make holiday memories in the great outdoors. Private group reservations available upon request. More information at mnhs.info/forest-holiday.
It's that time of the week where we check in with our newsroom. Joining us now is our reporter, Megan Buffington. Morning, Megan.
Good morning.
Thanks for being here.
Happy to be here, as always.
So you had an exploration.
A ray of sunshine.
You like Harold, you enjoy the color purple.
I do. I do enjoy the color purple.
You explored purple in a data reporting, mapping sort of way. So what led you to want to kind of dig deeper than what other media was reporting about elections and turnout and everything?
Yeah, so this didn't start as me going, I want to make a purple map. It ended that way, but it didn't start that way. It started with me just wanting to look at the precinct level results. So at every place that people in northern Minnesota went to vote, how did their vote break down? So with our focus on local, I decided to look at state house races. So for legislators, people were electing for the state house, and that ends up being about, I should have that number at the top of my head, but 10 to 12 different races in northern Minnesota. And so I took all those and I broke it down by how Republican and how DFL did they vote. And let's throw that on a map and see what pops out. And surprise, surprise, it is fairly purple. There are some spots of bright blue and there's a good chunk of dark red in there as well. But there's a lot of in between, which I think is what gets overlooked when you're looking at just election result maps.
Yeah, that was one of the things that I noticed right off the bat. So we've got these three different maps on the story you put out. And it is just a really interesting way to look at our region, and in a way that sort of, a lot of times in these visualizations, depending on how you voted, if you, you know, if a vote is 51%, 49%, you don't see yourself represented in any of the roundups if you're in the 49%. So it's super helpful, this one, because it allows folks to kind of see that their participation had an effect in a way.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's one thing that our voting system nationally people have discussions about. When it's first past the post, winner take all, if you hit that 50% threshold, you're the winner, even if it was 51-49 or one vote difference, you know, something like that. It can, when you only report the party that won and the person that won, it can feel invalidating to all the other people who did cast their votes and were an important part of the process. Especially when you're talking regionally, when you're talking statewide, when you're talking nationally, looking at these result maps, it can feel like that's not really accurate to this place we live. Even when you're just looking at state level results, when you see a sea of red, I've seen comments on social media in recent days where it's like, oh yeah, just a bunch of rednecks up there, a bunch of super ultra conservatives up in northern Minnesota. And yeah, we have some ultra conservatives up here, but we also have some ultra liberal. We have people who split their ballot. We have people who flip-flop between parties. That's not, just because it's all red on maps doesn't mean it's all red. And even at the national level, you have that too when you're looking at the Electoral College, and Minnesota's always blue. So going to college out of state, people are like, yeah, it's all Democrats up there, right? And I'm like, no, that's just the metro. Like, and even then, that story doesn't get told accurately either, because yes, metros tend to go more blue, but that doesn't mean there's not Republicans living in urban areas either. So it's just trying to get a little bit past that just the winner gets to tell the election story. There's more to it than that.
And could you talk a little bit to what it means to have a national or a media that's coming out of Minneapolis, St. Paul, and they're going to just show that first map that you have, that everything was red. They're reporting on a rural area, but how is it different for you living here to report on it, and how that can change kind of the conversation? To me, it just seems really an interesting thing about not other, but this is us. Does that make sense?
Right. Yeah. I feel like when reporters from not even necessarily just the metro, but nationally, things like that, come to northern Minnesota, they are expecting a certain type of person and certain responses. They come with a story already in mind. We're going to talk to all these rural conservatives out here, and it's Trump country out here, and things like that. That's a mindset so many people have if they come to tell stories out here. Whereas when I'm going out to report on my communities, people that are my neighbors and that are part of this area that I live in, I don't know who I'm going to talk to. I could get people on any end of the spectrum, because I know that political diversity is here. Even if it's not represented nationally and it doesn't feel that way sometimes, that is the reality of when I did my story after Tim Walz was selected as Kamala Harris's running mate and popped outside of Aldi and just chatted with people. You never know the response that you're going to get. And you can't just assume because one map shows this area is red, it's only Republicans living here. So I think that's a big part of it, is understanding that this political diversity is real here, and not having some preconceived notions of who is here and who is voting here and what those people care about. Because even you have a lot of diversity within. It is about 67% of northern Minnesota voted for the Republican state house candidates. But even within that pool, there's such a diversity in what issues they care about, why they vote red or blue, and whether it's a party thing, whether it's an issue thing, what issues it is. It's very easy to summarize when you're trying to get to trends and you have so much area to cover and you're trying to look statewide. But when you try to break it down to as close to the individual person and voter as you can get, it tells a much more diverse and nuanced story of our region.
What was it like to be out there on Election Day and be at polling places?
It was fun. Lori Shull and I, our volunteer photographer, hit the road. We were gabbing it up. We were having a great time going all over the place in our conversation. One thing that's so fun is there's something so rural, small town about all these polling places, even in like Hibbing. Hibbing, it's in this recreation center of one of the Orthodox churches up there. So you have all these like saints and these paintings and these artifacts that I've never seen, because I'm not familiar with the Orthodox religion a ton. So you have all that kind of artwork that you're like, this is unique and this is different with these polling booths right here. And then in Beauvais, where I voted that morning, we had to make another stop because, well, they have these vintage polling places out with these old canvas curtains. And I'm like, that caught my eye. We got to go back and learn more about those. But it's also, it's just fun to see. It doesn't feel heated, and maybe that's different in urban areas, maybe it's not, but it doesn't feel like people are coming in with an agenda or a party motivation. They're coming in with, I want to make my voice heard and cast my ballot. And then you even get some of that when I'm trying to talk to people as they're coming out. I make sure to talk to people after they've voted, just, mm-hmm. Hey, are you willing to chat with me? And you get people like, you know what, I spoke through my ballot. And I don't want to talk further about it. You got people who are really passionate about it. I think it's just, it's so interesting and so exciting and really heartening to see just, mm-hmm. how many people actually care and make that effort to come out, and how it varies from place to place. But there's a commonality and a similar vibe at most polling places, no matter what.
One of my favorite things about voting day is how we have created adult people loving one sticker. You know, everybody's
it's all about the sticker.
It's really funny that, like, nothing else, it's just so old-fashioned or something. There's just something about it, like, yo, I gotta get my stick, don't miss your sticker, gotta get your sticker, you know. I just think it's very fun.
When I was in Bovee, that was one of the poll workers was like, it's like we're all little kids again, and all we care about is getting the sticker at the end.
Yeah, absolutely. When you were going to some of those places, what were some of the poll workers' reactions? I was wondering, were some of them like, what are you doing here?
Yeah.
If they haven't had much coverage in the past, was there sort of any skepticism of you and Lori being there covering these very small polling places around northern Minnesota, or were they thrilled to see you? What was the reaction like from the workers and the folks at these places?
You do get some skepticism. So there's a couple different polling places we went to that I think kind of tell the different stories. So in Bovee, again, their head election worker had been an election judge for 42 years. She had never once had someone come and talk to her about reporting on it or taking pictures or things like that. She's like, Lori's asking, hey, I'm going to take pictures. I'm not going to get faces. You know, you want to have those respectful conversations rather than just walking in and taking pictures and freaking someone out. She's like, I've never been asked about this before. Like, yeah, you know the rules. We know the rules. You're all good. In Keewatin, where we also stopped, it was the head election judge's first time as an election judge ever. And she's like, kind of hesitant. You know, they're like, they get their training and stuff like that, but it feels like, well, you shouldn't be allowed to take pictures of people. You know, it feels like such a sacred, important place that it feels different from any other government happenings. But that's really what it is. It's a government procedure. You can come in and see what's going on and observe the process. And as media, we're allowed to do that as well. And once you have those conversations and talk, and I think again, like, oh yeah, I live just down the road. You know, that makes it so much easier than saying, I'm not like some big, scary media person. I have a microphone attached to me and I look a little goofy, but like, that's about it. I'm just another northern Minnesotan just like you. And then in Cohasset, we stopped and it was another, I think, newer election judge. And she, when we initially asked, said, no, you're not allowed to do that. We said, okay, no, we have the statute here. We had a letter and she made a call to the elections workers at Itasca County to make sure to confirm it with them, because she's like, I wanted to make sure that this is something you're allowed to do, which in the moment it was a little frustrating. It's like, come on, we know we can do this. But at the end of the day, you're remembering they are taking their job very seriously and making sure that our elections are secure and safe and free and fair. And of course she should go and ask if this is something that's never been asked of her before. And she's like, this feels